All right, what is up, everybody, and welcome back to another video. So today I have another encyclical for you guys. It's going to be kind of a controversial one this time. It's going to be The Syllabus of Errors by Pope Pius IX, and this is a document listing a whole bunch of propositions and ideas which are condemned by the Catholic Church and which a Catholic cannot hold in good conscience. And I say that this is a controversial one because it addresses a lot of modern secular errors. A lot of liberals of all persuasions are going to be kind of upset by this, whether it's classical liberals, who today we unfortunately call conservatives for the most part, or the progressive liberals, or even more theologically liberal Catholics. This is going to be a spicy document for them. It's probably not going to be received well. There's going to be all kinds of objections, all manner of things said about it, but this is Catholic teaching, this is Catholic tradition, and ultimately I think that this is important information for good faith Catholics to have, which is why I am reading it. So, with that intro out of the way, everybody, I'm going to start reading. This is just going to, again, list all of the condemned propositions. And it's going to sound as if they are endorsed, but they are not. They are just listed. They're steel-manned, basically. So, let's begin. The Syllabus of Errors by Pope Pius IX. Chapter 1. Pantheism, Naturalism, and Absolute Rationalism. 1. There exists no supreme, all-wise, all-provident divine being distinct from the universe. And God is identical with the nature of things, and is therefore subject to changes in effect. God is produced in man, and in the world, and all things are God, and have the very substance of God, and God is one and the same thing with the world, and therefore, spirit with matter, necessity with liberty, good with evil, justice with injustice. 2. All action of God upon man and the world is to be denied. 3. Human reason, without any reference whatsoever to God, is the sole arbiter of truth and falsehood, and of good and evil. It is law to itself, and suffices by its natural force to secure the welfare of men and of nations. 4. All the truths of religion proceed from the innate strength of human reason. Hence, reason is the ultimate standard by which man can and ought to arrive at the knowledge of all truths of every kind. 5. Divine revelation is imperfect and therefore subject to a continual and indefinite progress, corresponding with the advancement of human reason. 6. The faith of Christ is in opposition to human reason and divine revelation. Not only is it not useful, but it is even hurtful to the perfection of man. 7. The prophecies and miracles set forth and recorded in the sacred scriptures are the fiction of poets and the mysteries of the Christian faith. The result of philosophical investigations in the books of the Old and the New Testaments. There are contained mythical inventions, and Jesus Christ is himself a myth. Chapter 2, Moderate Rationalism. 8. As human reason is placed on a level with religion itself, so theological must be treated in the same manner as philosophical sciences. 9. All the dogmas of the Christian religion are indiscriminately the object of natural science or philosophy, and human reason, enlightened solely in a historical way, is able by its own natural strength and principles to attain to the true science of even the most abstruse dogmas, provided only that such dogmas be proposed to reason itself as its object. 10. As the philosopher is one thing and philosophy another, so it is the right and duty of the philosopher to subject himself to the authority which he shall have proved to be true. But philosophy neither can or ought to submit to any such authority. 11. The Church not only ought never to pass judgment on philosophy, but ought to tolerate the errors of philosophy, leading it to correct itself. 12. The decrees of the Apostolic See and of the Roman congregations impede the true progress of science. 13. The method and principles by which the old scholastic doctors cultivated theology are no longer suitable to the demands of our times and to the progress of the sciences. 14. Philosophy is to be treated without taking any account of supernatural revelation. 15. Every man is free to embrace and profess that religion which, guided by the light of the reason, he shall consider true. That's going to be really spicy for some of you guys. 16. Man may, in the observance of any religion, whatever, find the way of eternal salvation and arrive at eternal salvation. 17. Good hope at least is to be entertained of the eternal salvation of all those who are not at all in the true church of Christ. Ouch. Sorry, guys. 18. Protestantism is nothing more than another form of the same true Christian religion, in which form it is given to please God, equally as in the Catholic Church. And I think this is a good time to remind everybody that these are errors. These are not propositions which are affirmed by us. These are propositions that are condemned by us. So I'm very sorry to any Protestants that may be listening, but this is the traditional Catholic stance, and I think that it is rational, I think it is reasonable, so I do hold to it. I'm very sorry. Alright, chapter 4, socialism, communism, secret societies, biblical societies, clerical liberal societies. And that's all that this heading has, because this is self-explanatory. This means that all of these ideologies are condemned. Chapter 5. Errors concerning the church and her rights. This is where the liberals might have their sensibilities upset a little bit. 19. The church is not a true and perfect society entirely free, nor is she endowed with proper and perpetual rights of her own conferred upon her by her divine founder, but it appertains to the civil power to define what are the rights of the church and the limits within which she may exercise those rights. So this is an unambiguous rejection of the so-called separation of church and state. There's more on that subject in this document, but this is what I meant by liberal sensibilities may be upset. 20. The ecclesiastical power ought not to exercise its authority without the permission and assent of the civil government. 21. The church has not the power of defining dogmatically that the religion of the Catholic Church is the only true religion. That's just silly to believe if you believe that, but okay. 22. The obligation by which Catholic teachers and authors are strictly bound is confined to those things only which are proposed to universal belief as dogmas of faith by the infallible judgment of the church. 23. Roman pontiffs and ecumenical councils have wandered outside the limits of their powers, have usurped their right of princes, and have even erred in defining matters of faith and morals. 24. The church has not the power of using force, nor has she any temporal power, direct or indirect. 25. Besides the power inherent in the episcopate, other temporal power has been attributed to it by the civil authority, granted either explicitly or tacitly, which on that account is revocable by the civil authority whenever it thinks fit. 26. The church has no innate and legitimate right of acquiring and possessing property. 27. The sacred ministers of the church and the Roman pontiff are to be absolutely excluded from every charge and dominion over temporal affairs. 28. It is not lawful for bishops to publish even letters apostolic without the permission of the government. That's insane. 29. Favors granted by the Roman pontiff ought to be considered null unless they have been sought for through the civil government. 30. The immunity of the church and of ecclesiastical persons derived its origin from civil law. 31. The ecclesiastical forum or tribunal for the temporal causes, whether civil or criminal, of clerics ought by all means to be abolished, even without consulting and against the protest of the Holy See. 32. The personal immunity by which clerics are exonerated from military conscription and service in the army may be abolished without violation either of natural right or of equity. Its abolition is called for by civil progress, especially in a society framed on the model of a liberal government. 33. It does not appertain exclusively to the power of ecclesiastical jurisdiction, by right proper and innate, to direct the teaching of theological questions. 34. The teaching of those who compare the sovereign pontiff to a prince free and acting in the universal church is a doctrine which prevailed in the Middle Ages. 35. There is nothing to prevent the decree of a general council or the act of all peoples from transferring the supreme pontificate from the bishop and city of Rome to another bishop and another city. 36. The definition of a national council does not admit of any subsequent discussion, and the civil authority can assume this principle as the basis for its acts. 37. National churches, withdrawn from the authority of the Roman pontiff and altogether separated, can be established. 38. The Roman pontiffs have, by their too arbitrary conduct, contributed to the division of the church into Eastern and Western. Chapter 6. Errors about civil society, considered both in itself and its relation to the church. 39. The state, as being the origin and source of all rights, is endowed with a certain right not circumscribed by any limits. 40. The teaching of the Catholic Church is hostile to the well-being and interest of society. That's absurd. 41. The civil government, even when in the hands of an infidel sovereign, has a right to an indirect negative power over religious affairs. It therefore possesses not only the right called that of exequatur, but also of appeal called appellatio. Sorry if my Latin is terrible, I'm not fluent in Latin at all. 42. In the case of conflicting laws enacted by the two powers, the civil law prevails. 43. The secular dower has the authority to rescind, declare, and render null solemn conventions, commonly called concordats, entered into with the Apostolic See regarding the use of rights appertaining to ecclesiastical immunity without the consent of the Apostolic See and even in spite of its protest. 44. The civil authority may interfere in matters relating to religion, morality, and spiritual government. Hence, it can pass judgment on the instructions issued for the guidance of consciences conformally with their mission by the pastors of the church. Further, it has the right to make enactments regarding the administration of the divine sacraments and the dispositions necessary for receiving them. 45. The entire government of public schools in which the youth of a Christian state is educated, except to a certain extent in the case of episcopal seminaries, may and ought to appertain to the civil power and belong to it, so far that no other authority whatsoever shall be recognized as having any right to interfere in the discipline of schools, the arrangement of the studies, the conferring of degrees, and the choice or approval of the teachers. Moreover, even in ecclesiastical seminaries, the method of studies to be conducted is subject to the civil authority. That was number 46, by the way. 47. The best theory of civil society requires that popular schools open to children of every class of the people and generally all public institutes intended for instructions in letters and philosophical sciences and for the carrying on of education of youth should be freed from all ecclesiastical control and interference and should be fully subjected to the civil and political power at the pleasure of the rulers and according to the standard of the prevalent opinions of the age. 48. Catholics may approve of the system of educating youth unconnected with Catholic faith and the power of the church in which regards the knowledge of merely natural things and only, or at least, primarily the ends of the earthly social life. 49. The civil power may prevent the prelates of the church and the faithful from communicating freely and mutually with the Roman pontiff. 50. Lay authority possesses of itself the right of presenting bishops and may require of them to undertake administration of the diocese before they receive canonical institution and the letters apostolic from the Holy See. 51. And further, the lay government has the right of deposing bishops from their pastoral functions and is not bound to obey the Roman pontiff in those things which relate to the institution of bishops and the appointment of bishops. 52. Government can, by its own right, alter the age prescribed by the church for the religious profession of women and men, and may require of all religious orders to admit no person to take solemn vows without its permission. 53. The laws enacted for the protection of religious orders and regarding their rights and duties ought to be abolished. Nay, more civil government may lend its assistance to all who desire to renounce the obligation which they have undertaken of a religious life and to break their vows. Government may also suppress the said religious orders as likewise collegiate churches and civil benefices, even those of adversum, and subject their property and revenues to the administration of pleasure of the civil power. 54. Kings and princes are not only exempt from the jurisdiction of the church, but are superior to the church in deciding question of jurisdiction. 55. The church ought to be separated from the state and the state from the church. That's, again, a direct condemnation of a principle that we hold sacred in modern society. But in Catholicism, it's condemned. 56. Moral laws do not stand in need of the divine sanction, and it is not at all necessary that human laws should be made conformable to the laws of nature and receive their power of binding from God. 57. The science of philosophical things and morals and also civil laws may and ought to keep aloof from divine ecclesiastical authority. 58. No other forces are to be recognized except those which reside in matter, and all the rectitude and excellence of morality ought to be placed in the accumulation and increase of riches by every possible means and the gratification of pleasure. 59. Right consists in the material fact. All human duties are an empty word, and all human facts have the force of right. 60. Authority is nothing else but numbers and the sum total of material forces. 61. The injustice of an act, when successful, inflicts no injury on the sanctity of right. 62. The principle of non-intervention, as it is called, ought to be proclaimed and observed. 63. It is lawful to refuse obedience to legitimate princes and even to rebel against them. 64. The violation of any solemn oath, as well as any wicked and flagitious action repugnant to the eternal law, is not only not blamable, but is altogether lawful and worthy of the highest praise when done through love of country. Chapter 8, Errors Concerning Christian Marriage. And I apologize, I didn't read the title for Chapter 7. It was Errors Concerning Natural and Christian Ethics, and that was 56 through 64. Alright, so 65. The doctrine that Christ has raised marriage to the dignity of a sacrament cannot be at all tolerated. 66. The sacrament of marriage is only a something accessory to the contract and separate from it. The sacrament itself consists in the nuptial benediction alone. 67, by the law of nature, the marriage tie is not indissoluble, and in many cases, divorce, properly so-called, may be decreed by the civil authority. 68. The church has not the power of establishing diriment impediments of marriage, but such a power belongs to the civil authority, by which existing impediments are to be removed. 69. In the Dark Ages, the church began to establish diriment impediments, not by her own right, but by using a power borrowed from the state. 70. The canons of the Council of Trent, which anathematize those who dare to deny to the church the right of establishing diriment impediments, either are not dogmatic or must be understood as referring to such borrowed power. 71. The form of solemnizing marriage prescribed by the Council of Trent under pain of nullity does not bind in cases where the civil law lays down another form and declares that when this new form is used, the marriage shall be valid. 72. Boniface VIII was the first who declared that the vow of chastity taken at ordination renders marriage void. 73. In force of a merely civil contract, there may exist between Christians a real marriage, and it is false to say that either the marriage contract between Christians is always a sacrament, or that there is no contract if the sacrament be excluded. 74. Matrimonial causes and espousals belong by their nature to civil tribunals. Chapter 9 is the last chapter. Errors regarding the civil power of the sovereign pontiff. 75. The children of the Christian and Catholic Church are divided amongst themselves about the compatibility of temporal with the spiritual power. 76. The abolition of the temporal power of which the apostolic see is possessed would contribute in the greatest degree to the liberty and prosperity of the church. Chapter 10, my bad, this is the last one. Errors having reference to modern liberalism. This is gonna be spicy, guys. Get ready. 77. In the present day, is it no longer expedient that the Catholic religion should be held as the only religion of the state to the exclusion of all other forms of worship? Again, I'm going to remind you that this is an error. 78. Hence, it has been wisely decided by law in some Catholic countries that persons coming to reside therein should enjoy the public exercise of their own peculiar worship. That's devastating. 79. Moreover, it is false that the civil liberty of every form of worship and the full power given to all of overtly and publicly manifesting any opinions whatsoever and thoughts conduce more easily to corrupt the morals and minds of the people and to propagate the pest of indifferentism. Again, error. And finally, 80. The Roman pontiff can and ought to reconcile himself and come to terms with progress, liberalism, and modern civilization. So this encyclical does continue. He briefly writes a statement of his own to conclude, and what follows is not an error. This is the Pope himself speaking now. The faith teaches us, and human reason demonstrates, that a double order of things exists, and that we must therefore distinguish between the true earthly powers, the one of natural origin, which provides for secular affairs and the tranquility of human society, the other of supernatural origin, which presides over the city of God, that is to say, the Church of Christ, which has been divinely instituted for the sake of souls and of eternal salvation. The duties of this twofold power are most wisely ordered in such a way that to God is given what is God's, Matthew 22:21, and because of God to Caesar what is Caesar's, who is great because he is smaller than heaven. Certainly the church has never disobeyed this divine command. The church, which always and everywhere instructs the faithful to show the respect which they should inviolately have for the supreme authority and its secular rights. Venerable brethren, you see clearly enough how sad and full of perils is the condition of Catholics in the regions of Europe which we have mentioned. Nor are things any better or circumstances calmer in America, where some regions are so hostile to Catholics that their governments seem to deny by their actions the Catholic faith they claim to profess. In fact, there for the last few years, a ferocious war on the church, its institutions, and the right of the Apostolic See has been raging. Venerable brothers, it is surprising that in our time such a great war is being waged against the Catholic Church. But anyone who knows the nature, desires, and intentions of the sects, whether they be Masonic or bear another name, and compares them with the nature of systems and the vastness of the obstacles by which the church has been assailed almost everywhere, cannot doubt that the present misfortune must mainly be imputed to the frauds and machinations of the sects. It is from them that the synagogue of Satan, which gathers its troops against the Church of Christ, takes its strength. In the past, our predecessors were vigilant from the beginning, and Israel had already denounced them to the kings and the nations and had condemned them time and time again. And even we have not failed in this duty. If those who would have able to avert such a deadly scourge had only more faith in the supreme pastors of the church. But this scourge, winding through sinuous caverns, deceiving many with astute frauds, finally has arrived at the point where it comes forth impetuously from its hiding place and triumphs as a powerful master, since the throng of its propagandists has grown enormously. These wicked groups think that they have already become masters of the world and that they have almost reached their pre-established goal. Having sometimes obtained what they desired, and that is power, in several countries they boldly turn to the help of powers and authorities which they have secured to try to submit the Church of God to the most cruel servitude, to undermine the foundations on which it rests, to contaminate its splendid qualities, and moreover, to strike it with frequent blows, to shake it, to overthrow it, and if possible, to make it disappear completely from the face of the earth. Things being thus, venerable brothers, make every effort to defend the faithful which are entrusted to you against the insidious contagion of these sects, and to save from perdition those who unfortunately have inscribed themselves in such sects. Make known and attack those who, whether suffering from or planning deception, are not afraid to affirm that these shady congregations aim only at the profit of society, at progress and mutual benefit. Explain to them often and impress deeply on their souls the papal constitutions on this subject, and teach them that the Masonic associations are anathematized by them, not only in Europe, but also in America, and wherever they may be in the whole world. To the archbishops and bishops of Prussia concerning the situation of the Catholic Church faced with persecution by that government. But although the bishops resisting persecution should be praised rather than pitied, the scorn of episcopal dignity, the violation of liberty and the rights of the church, the ill treatment which does not only oppress those dioceses, but also the others of the Kingdom of Prussia, demand that we, owing to the apostolic office which God has entrusted us, in spite of our insufficient merit, protest against laws which have produced such great evils and make one fear even greater ones. And as far as we are able to do so with the sacred authority of divine law, we vindicate for the church the freedom which has been trodden underfoot with sacrilegious violence. That is why, by this letter, we intend to do our duty by announcing openly to all those whom this matter concerns and to the whole Catholic world that these laws are null and void because they are absolutely contrary to the divine constitution of the Church. In fact, with respect to matters which concern the Holy Ministry, our Lord did not put the mighty of this century in charge, but Saint Peter, who he entrusted not only with feeding his sheep, but also the goats. Therefore, no power in the world, however great it may be, can deprive of the pastoral office those whom the Holy Ghost has made bishops, in order to feed the Church of God. And that is the end of the Syllabus of Errors. Again, I am sharing this in full because it contains many condemned propositions which are taken for granted in modern society, and I think that any faithful Catholic which wants to understand the tradition and what it is we've truly believed on these subjects needs to read these documents and understand them. And so that is why it is my goal with this channel to help them do just that. But with that being said, everybody, thank you guys so much for watching. If you enjoy this kind of content, make sure to leave a like, subscribe, and let me know what you think in the comments section. And I will see you guys in the next one. God bless.